Kevin Bieksa, we welcome to the conversation. I feel like you would have painted your face like the Road Warriors of the LOD at one point when you were younger.
I was a big fan of them. I was more of a Hard Foundation guy. That was I liked yep. Animal and Hawk.
Yeah, you could see with the goatee like Jim the Anvil Neidhart at one time there, Juice. That would have been a good look for you.
Love Jim the Anvil. And it's funny, I've been watching some of those. I was a big wrestling fan in the 80s when I was a kid, in the early 90s. And I watched some of those recent documentaries. I can't remember what it's called, like King of the Ring or something.
Dark
like
Side
that.
Of the Ring.
Dark Side of the Ring.
Dark Side of the Ring, yes. If you watch those, like every episode's a different story, and there's just some unbelievable stories from that era. Like, what a different time. And those guys, they burned the candle on both ends, didn't they?
Yeah, did they ever.
Oh, they did. Well, Juice, let me ask you this, because probably once every show, James somehow refers to wrestling. I'm like you, going back and watching that documentary. You know, I used to see Bret Hart wrestle. He'd come through Edmonton. You'd watch him there. You go, this is awesome. But I left it. Now, the odd time I watch it, I'll admit, I've watched Divas. I've watched the Bellas, those shows once or twice. But James is into it. So your son is of the age where people kind of watch wrestling. Does he watch it now, currently? Do you watch it currently?
No, no chance. It's over. It was over.
You've matured. You've matured.
Yeah, like, well, no, I don't know if it's matured, but it was so good back in the like the 80s, the early 90s, the mid 90s. And then I think it was Shawn Michaels or somebody who kind of did a tell-all tale and kind of ruined it for all the fans. And everyone figured out it was fake and it was, you know, choreographed. I think that ruined it for a lot. And then The Rock came in and he saved it for a while for me. But no, I haven't watched wrestling in decades. I still have those wrestling dolls from the 80s when we were kids. They're still like in my mom's house in the garage or something like that. Do you remember those things? Like the hard rubber, vulcanized rubber wrestling
yeah.
dolls?
I might have the Andre the Giant figure next to a couple of pucks and baseballs in my office here. But I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
No.
They're That's worth good. Money. That's awesome. Those things are worth money now. Let's dive into the Canucks here for a second, because a little bird told us last week that there's a pending unrestricted free agent goaltender that was in Toronto recently having beers with you and Berkey. What's going on with Markstrom, man? You probably know all the details.
I don't know what you're talking about. Your little bird's got a big mouth.
We're just good interviewers when he brings it up.
Well, Berkey was bragging about going for beer last week on our radio show, so he wasn't exactly whispering it. He was telling it. He was being the town crier.
Well, I play with Markey back in Vancouver, and I keep touch with most of my former teammates, and whenever we're in cities and stuff, we like to get together and grab a beer and catch up. So, I mean, didn't talk about hockey at all, right? Like, that's not the only thing that's on our mind. So, I don't know.
You talked wrestling.
It was uneventful, but it was good to catch up with Markey. It's been a while. Like, he's just an awesome guy. Like, he's such a fun guy to hang around with. You guys in the media, you see him a lot in the dressing room. Like, he's always in a good mood. He's always happy. He's always in a good mood. He's just a fun guy to be around.
Kevin Bieksa joining us this morning, Perry Silkowski and James Cebulski. Cebul and I got into it a little bit on the previous hour. We're getting set for October 9th. There's rumors that Tanev might have something coming from Pittsburgh. And I am of the mindset, listen, you're an unrestricted free agent. This is the time to make money. And most guys, hopefully they have, and hopefully they will. But because of the economics, I do think we are going to see players who now have the opportunity to go elsewhere, who will be playing for less money next year because of the revenue situation and the world we live in. Agree or disagree? Do you think everybody's getting a raise?
Well, I agree. This is like the TMZ segment of your show where, you know, rumor Markstrom was in Toronto and Tanev might be going to Pittsburgh. Like, I feel like we need like the host here, but you know, yeah, like common sense tells you that revenues are going to be lower, and there's been speculation that the NHL is not going to start until the new year because a lot of owners really want at least a half-capacity arena. and they don't really want to start the season with no fans in the stands. It doesn't make sense to them financially. So you got to just do the math. And even with the deferrals and everything that they're really,
I think I lost you.
No, we're still there.
No, we're here.
Oh, okay. But even with deferrals and everything, there's just not going to be as much money in the pot. So, yeah, of course, this is a really tough year to be a UFA, right? Like, this is a year where you're going to have to probably sign a shorter-term deal. Like, and I know agents don't want to hear this, but, like, if you're looking for your big long-term deal this year, like, you're in trouble. So there's going to have to be some different tactics, or you're going to have to concede a lot of money just because of the environment that we're in.
Give me a sense, Juice. Like, you've been through negotiations. You know, you had a long pro career going with different contracts. In terms of power rankings, like term, AAV, market location, give me a sense of where things rank or what was important or prioritized for you or a sense of for a lot of players, for that matter.
Well, yeah, that's an individual preference, and that's a conversation that everyone has with their agent. And I know talking with Kurt Overhart, we always spoke going into a negotiation. He's like, okay, where are you at? Like, what's the priority for you? Is it for maximizing money? Is it location? And obviously in Vancouver, it was always, okay, I want to stay here long term. That's my goal. So, you know, I had like three or four negotiations with Vancouver. I think maybe three, and they're all very quick and very easy. And you obviously don't want to, you know, give up or divulge your position. But, you know, Kurt would go into these negotiations knowing in the back of his head, Kevin wants to stay here. His family wants to stay here. So I can't show that too much. But at the end of the day, like, we got to find a deal that's going to work for both sides. So, you know, for me, that was important. As you get older and you have kids, having a no move clause is important because now you're giving up a little bit of money if you want a no trade or a no move clause. Right. Like, that's. So that's another thing that you have to talk about. Like, where's your priorities? And, you know, I don't know. Like, I haven't talked to Tanny about, you know, his contract situation. But, like, I'm sure playing with his brother is a thing that's in the back of his mind, right? Like, that'd be a pretty special thing. And I know him and his brother are close, you know, and I'm sure their parents would love that. So that's something I'm sure that's factoring in. So, you know, Vancouver's got to be close or careful when they're negotiating with him because – he's probably not just going to stay for no reason and for a huge, huge, huge discount. And Tanny's by no means a greedy guy. Like, you know, I think he would take, I don't think he cares about his AAV, but they have to be careful because they're probably going to lose him if they don't give him a legit offer.
Once you set your parameters with the agent, is it back and forth? You're finding out, you know, every day there's an update, or you just go, okay, here it is. Let's lay it all out. Let me know when we're close.
Well, you got to give your agent some freedom to do his thing, right? So you can't say, okay, call the GM, call Dave Nonis right now. Like, you have to let him pick and choose when he feels it's the right time. And sometimes they're connecting about other guys, and then it's a great opportunity to bring you up, right? So, like, there's a little bit of an art to it that you have to trust your agent. But for sure, like, my big deal after the 2011 playoffs, Gillis actually called my agent and I in the day after Game 7, after we lost in the final. I was driving my kids to Montessori, and Gillis called my agent and wanted us to come in right there. So we went in, and we sat, and we listened. They're basically, we want to bring you back, and blah, blah, blah. And then we left, and I talked with my agent. I go, yeah, like, I want to come back. Perfect. Let's make this happen. And then we start talking about number, and then Kurt's going to hate that I say this, but I told him, I go, listen, like, I don't – like, I know the goal for usually is to get as much as you can, right? But I wouldn't feel comfortable making more than Dan Hamhuis right now, who had just signed the year before at 4 point whatever. And I go, I feel like we're equals. I feel like we're on the same pairing. It'd be great to make the same as him. So this isn't something that your agent wants to hear, right? And we went back and forth, and he's like, well, how about if I ask for five? How about if I ask for – and I go, no, no, no. So he ended up convincing me. He's like, okay, well, present value of his contract last year with, you know, inflation would mean this much this year. So he ended up convincing me to take a little bit more. But, you know, that's something that it's a personal thing, right? It goes back and forth between what are you comfortable making? Because you have to be careful, because you also don't want to be the most overpaid guy in the room, because that comes with a lot of pressure and a lot of scrutiny. So you want to make sure that you're fairly compensated. right, for yourself personally and for where you are within the team, if that makes sense. I know that's a really personal story.
No, it does.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. Kevin Bieksa here on Sportsnet 650. Elaborate a little more, the pressure of being the highest paid guy.
Well, you know, you always have to be on and you always have to be good in a Canadian market. So if you're the highest paid defenseman, which I was a lot of years in Vancouver, and you're not playing absolutely your best and your team's not winning, you're the one that's going to have the hammer come down on them. And you're the one that's going to have to answer to that. So
internally or externally, Kev?
Both, right? And you feel like the internal pressure too. You're like, okay, I'm the highest paid defenseman. Like, I have to perform every night. And if you don't, you're hard on yourself. And then you obviously hear it from the media and then the fan base. And I don't think you want to be overpaid extremely. I know some people are like, I don't care. I just want to make as much as I can. But I think if you're staying in a market long term and you really care about that team, you want to be fairly compensated. So, you know, the pressure that comes with that is also fair. And the expectation that comes with that is also fair, right?
Now, you just shared your story saying, hey, you were very cognizant of how much you were going to be paid and what fit in that room. I'm going to imagine, because of that group that you guys had, led by Danny and Hank, and whether players shared the story with you or not, that you weren't alone, that you kind of had a group of guys that weren't selfish for the most part and said, you know what, maybe, yeah, I probably could have got a little bit more, man, but I don't want to leave us. I think we're a good setup. I mean, does that happen quite a bit in teams?
Well, we never really talked about it, no. Very, very, like, when I first came up, it's way different than now. When I first came up, nobody talked about contracts. Nobody talked about what they made. That was something that was a little bit taboo. And then towards the end of my career, like, everyone's talking about it. Young guys are like, what do you make? And I just can't believe how much it changed, right? Like, that privacy had been eliminated. But back in, like, between 2005 and 2015, like in that situation, Hamuse, I actually called Hamuse and I said, hey, listen, like, it's going to be released tomorrow. I'm going to be making a little bit more than you, but just so you know, I don't feel like I'm better than you. I just feel, and he goes, hey, like, don't even say this, get as much as you can. I'm totally cool with it. But for me, that was important to make sure that he knew that I feel like we're equals. I remember when my deal before that, we agreed to a deal verbally. And there was something with, like, a signing bonus that Nonis didn't really factor in. And then when we go to sign it, he realized that I was going to be making slightly more than Matias Olland. And I think he had some sort of, you know, verbal agreement that he was going to be the highest paid defenseman when they negotiated his contract years before. So they had to reach out to Matias. And he's like, yeah, like, pay Kevin whatever he deserves. Like, Matias, like, super great teammate, you know, like, most guys are like that. Most guys want the best for their teammates, and they want you to make as much as you can and get it while you play, because we all have short careers, right? But you got to feel comfortable where you are, you know, making what you're making in relation to everybody else. I always wanted to feel comfortable about that.
Kevin Bieksa here on Sportsnet 650. So, I mean, with the conversation, you kind of touched on it a few minutes ago about just, you know, Tanev's situation. And, yeah, that I think the Canucks got to be mindful that, you know, if they're going to hit a certain point, like, there's a serious risk of potentially losing Tanev. And for a team that is already somewhat thin and lacks depth on the blue line, I guess you look at the option where the Canucks will say, okay, we'll try to promote from within, but I think you're also going to have to find another veteran to play alongside on this blue line core. Is the market going to provide that with unrestricted free agency, and do you anticipate, you know, bargains to be had out there potentially based on what you talked about at the outset with, you know, with the revenues and the ultimate impact of COVID-19, like, do you see that there's being potential value out there, Kevin? Is there anybody that comes to mind at all?
Well, put it this way. Berkey did a segment, I think, last week of all seven Canadian teams and what they look like, and he ranked them in order of closest to winning a Stanley Cup to furthest away. And he talked about, like, one or two key points to every team. And I'd say five out of the seven teams, he said, need to improve their defense. Everybody's trying to improve their defense. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of defensemen out there that are available. If you have a good one, you hold on to it with two hands, with your kung fu grip, and you don't let it go. So if the Canucks were to let Tanev go, then I really think this team would take a big step backwards from where it's going. So, like, that's the only way I can put it. There's yeah, there's going to be defensemen available, but there's very, very hard to find quality defensemen right now. And I don't think the Canucks should let him go if they can help it. Like, if they're not even anywhere close, then yeah, I get it. But they got to at least try to keep this guy because he's a special guy. He's just, there's so many intangibles that Chris Tanev brings to the table.
I think the difficulty, though, is how do you change a team if you're, you know, they realize they're better than maybe people thought. They're closer to competing for a Stanley Cup than people thought. But you have to make some changes. We were talking about that 2011 Boston Bruins team and how many changes they have made to stay competitive over the last 9 years. Like, at some point, although you're your buddies, I think GMs and fans got to realize, as much as you respect that, relationships and parting of the ways is something about building a team going forward.
Yeah, so what's the question there?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking the same thing, that was kind of my statement. I think the fact is, yeah, you need Tanev, but at some point you have to manage a roster and a salary that works. And as much as Chris Tanev is valuable, maybe the only way you look at it is you're going to have to play someone like, what are these young guys? If there's a young Kevin Bieksa there, like, when is he looking for his opportunity? Don't you have to move some parts that you know, are available? If you got guys signed up, it's usually the guys that don't have a contract that move.
Well, if you need to move Chris Tanev because you can't afford him, that's one thing. Like, there's a cap, there's a hard cap there, I get that, right? There's contracts, there's Pettersson's up soon, and Quinn's going to be up soon. Yeah, like, I get that part. That's a legitimate reason. But if you're moving him because you want to make room for a young guy to come in, well, I don't get that. I never bought that argument. If a young guy is going to come in and he's got to take his ice time, he's got to take his spot, he's got to earn his position on the team. I don't think you just give a position to a young guy and just cross your fingers and hope he does a great job. And, you know, I just never believed in that. So, I think with the Tanev situation, I understand what you're saying. You're kind of telling me I'm being a little bit biased, which I am, right? But look at which team do you think is going to win the Stanley Cup this year? Probably
Dallas.
Like, I think Dallas. I think Dallas has a good chance. Yeah. Dallas is the oldest team in the NHL that played in the playoffs afterwards, and they have a lot of guys that teams have given up on, and Pavelski and Perry and Cogliano and Khudobin and, you know, a lot of guys that teams have given up on, even Seguin to a certain degree, right? Like, you can't just write people off and think the next wave coming in is going to pick up the slack. Because sometimes when you do that, you wait 10 years before you make it to the playoffs again. So,
but, Juice, really, I would argue that the term given up on is not the case, because I don't think the Canucks have given up on Chris Tanev. I just think you can't afford him. That's the reality of the business.
Well, then I agree with that. If you can't afford him, you can't afford him. Then we agree. We agree there.
You know, Kevin.
Seem like,
and
you're,
I,
agreeing with me. Seem like you're trying to pick a fight with me, though.
Well, we've got another 2 hours of radio, so we're trying
not
to get
like my
something
wife
going.
Picking fights.
But you know, I think you make two excellent points there, Kev. And I think one, that you probably saw that in terms of expecting the prospects and the young guys to kind of help you guys to come into that next wave. You probably saw that firsthand with that 2011 core, that, you know, waiting for the reinforcements, where the veteran core continued to age and there were no reinforcements to kind of help you guys, like you see with some other teams in the NHL that have had success and continued success for years. You didn't have that. But, you know, secondly, you look at the Stars. I mean, the other thing that the Dallas Stars, never mind just the age, they're getting a lot of production from guys on, you know, contracts, guys making under $1 million, and guys coming out of nowhere, right? Like, I mean, Heiskanen's going to get paid, but he's on an ELC. You've got Gurianov, who's, like, you know, who's contributing. You've got Hanley, who's contributing. Kivaranta stepping up with 5 goals in the playoffs. Like, you know, in the cap system, it really is essential to find a way to get production out of guys who don't make necessarily the millions and millions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Heiskanen, too. I get in trouble every time I say it. I guess Dallas PR reaches out if you say Heiskanen, because he's adamant about being called Heiskanen. So burn that into your memory right there.
Done.
Yeah, but you need contribution. If you're ever going to go far in the playoffs, you need contributions from so many guys top to bottom. I'd argue that Dallas is big boys, they haven't been there the whole playoffs. Ben's played unbelievable the last couple rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Radulov's scored a couple big goals here and there. Seguin's worked hard, but you're right. They're there because of a guy like Kivaranta who gets a spot because Cogliano gets hurt and he scores a hat trick in game seven, right, to move them on. And they're there. Gurianov led their team in goals all year, so he's not really a surprise. But I think Oleksiak, for me, this guy's been unbelievable, right? Like, at first, I was like, oh, another big defenseman that thinks he's Bobby Orr. It just doesn't know his role, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking. Right? Another Shane O'Brien who thinks he's going end-to-end every time instead of just playing good, tough D. But this guy's got unbelievable offensive instincts, and he carries the puck. He defends well. He's physical. He's been a bit of an unsung hero for me. So there's a lot. Hudobin, obviously, right? This guy, played with him. I never thought, and this is just shows you, when a guy gets into a rhythm and when he's in his zone, he can become an elite player. And Hudobin's in his zone right now, and he is unbelievable, and it's so fun to watch him play. So, yeah, you need all these guys to be heroes in their own roles to get this far. And you're right, it's not always the top-paid guys. It's guys that are making $1 million. So that's where the skill of a GM and your scouting team comes in, right? Having scouts that you trust, that are pro scouts that you trust, that are watching other teams, and like, this guy's a good player. Like, he didn't have a role on that team, but he's a really good player. We got to bring him in, right? And he'll contribute. Like, much like a Fannenberg and a Jordy Benn, those guys came in, and I thought they really contributed this year. And they were, again, guys that other teams kind of gave up on. But somebody in Vancouver in the scouting system liked them and liked what they brought to the table. That's what you need to be a good team.
Well, it proves once again, before we let you go and you get set for the game tonight, for the last 2 years, I was hoping Tampa Bay would win a Stanley Cup, because I just thought that, you know, skill and finesse is great. But here they are. They've changed that team. They'll bang bodies too. But it sounds like you're leaning towards the depth and the big bodies and the maturity of the Dallas Stars might be what takes them across the finish line in this series. Am I reading that right as we get set for game three?
Well, it's going to be close. It'll go to 6 or 7 games, I think. But I just think Dallas has gotten better every round. I thought they weren't good at all in the round robin. They were okay against Calgary. They had their moments. They were unbelievable against, Colorado and then, you know, Vegas. Didn't think they'd get by Vegas. And they just keep getting better and better. So how do you bet against them? You know, every round they've gotten better. And can you imagine if Tampa had JT Miller too? Like, then they'd be, they'd be legit. That's too bad there. But anyways, their loss is the Canucks gain. But it's going to be a close series. I'm just maybe wishful thinking because I have a lot of close friends on Dallas. But I'm hoping that they.
Yeah, I think from a Vancouver standpoint, when it comes to JT Miller, I think the term is sorry, not sorry. Hey, listen. Thanks so much. It's amazing how many text messages we get every week from people that just say, man, we love listening to you. And I thought that was great from The Athletic to continue to work as your PR vehicle. The breakout star, I think the article last week was the breakout star.
Well, you know what? When you get so many daggers thrown at you when you play for the Ducks, I think that was like a little bit of a reinforcement
make good
for the 3 years.
Thanks, Kev.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Good talking to you.